So we're back with the economic news of today, and I was hoping to really have this show be more about global economics, maybe have a discussion on the situation over in the UK regarding the Brexit, what's taking place there, maybe travel to the Mediterranean and talk about Italy, how they've entered a recession, talk about the implication that has for the broader countries in Europe, specifically Germany, and maybe then go over to China and Australia and have a really all-around-the-world conversation on economics and their respective markets. But we had too much interesting news come out today for those who are paying attention in regards to the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, along with his predecessor, Janet Yellen. Now, the stock markets, the major indices, I should say, for the U.S., they were all down today. Nothing scary, nothing drastic, but they were all down, so there wasn't a whole bunch of optimism in the markets following President Trump's State of the Union speech. I'm not going to blame the market down day on President Trump. There's a whole host of reasons why this market is down, and in my opinion, it should be down a lot further. But we have a Federal Reserve that has reversed course, and instead of continuing its plan on tightening monetary policy, meaning increasing interest rates, the federal funds rate specifically, along with unwinding their $4 trillion balance sheet, we come to find today that Janet Yellen thinks that the next move may actually be, in fact, a rate cut and not a rate hike. Wow. I'm almost left speechless, except I know how these guys behave. If the markets throw their temper tantrum, they come and give them their fix. I wrote this in an article that I just posted to the site, Capital News, under the K word. Check it out. Goes into detail. What's been taking place? What's going on? What's likely to happen next? While I think it's poor policy for the Federal Reserve if they in fact do another rate cut, and not a rate hike, but a rate cut, you've killed the patient. The stock market are drug addicts, bunch of junkies. The Fed is their dealer. Oh, come on, man, just give me one more fix, one more hit. I promise this will be it. No. They've been saying that for a decade, and they keep giving them one more hit. What becomes dangerous is when the last hit comes and it kills the addict. There is nowhere in the Federal Reserve's charter or mission statement to be a backstop to the stock market. None. Nowhere. Can't find it because it doesn't exist. What is the Federal Reserve's charter? What are they supposed to do? They're supposed to implement policies that achieves full employment and maintains price stability, which is sort of another way of saying it's inflation targeting, which is what all other central banks do, inflation targeting. Well, according to the statements by the Federal Reserve themselves, we know unemployment is extremely low. We hear that from economists. We hear that from the Federal Reserve. We hear that all the time from President Trump and his administration. That's an economic data point that they love to tout and compliment themselves for. And from a political standpoint, I understand that. What politician doesn't want to take credit for the lowest unemployment rate in decades and having the lowest unemployment rate across the African American community, the Hispanic community, the Asian community, having high participation amongst women, what politician wouldn't compliment himself and his administration? And according to the Federal Reserve, price stability or inflation isn't a threat. It's, for all intents and purposes, a non-issue. If the Federal Reserve wants to achieve an inflation rate of 2%, and we happen to be around 1.8%, if you believe those numbers, I do not. I think if you take a deep breath and look at all of the costs and all of the things that you pay for on a daily basis or on a weekly basis or on a monthly basis, and you ask yourself, have my costs only gone up 1.8%? You'd say, hell no. Hell no. Not even close. I wish they only went up 1.8%. But that's what we're told. So that's what we deal with. So if the Federal Reserve is achieving its charter, low unemployment, stable prices, low inflation, and they say that the economy is strong, that the president and his administration comes out and touts this economic miracle, then what's the concern with increasing interest rates and unwinding a $4 trillion balance sheet? Everything's fantastic. Let me give you an example of what this is like. The president, some members of the Federal Reserve, other economists, market analysts, they all come out and say the U.S. economy is strong. Some of them say it's very strong. Some of them say it's never been stronger. So look at it like this. If you have strong legs, you don't need to be using crutches. If you had a broken leg, you need a crutch. That was low interest rates. That was quantitative easing. That was the Federal Reserve and other central banks the world over expanding their balance sheets, buying bonds, government bonds from their respective governments, which is in effect monetizing the debt, which is in effect a default. But since everybody's doing it, don't worry about it, it's okay. So if you now have strong legs because you were able to use crutches, the doctor, in this case, the Federal Reserve, was able to give you the medicine you needed, the treatment you needed, in this case, low interest rates, you're healed. You're a new man. You can run sprints. You can run marathons. You can do whatever you want. Then why can't they take the crutches away? Why did they say you're going to be good to go? You're going to be good to run the 100 meter. You're going to be good to run a marathon. No problems. You kind of fell a little bit. They said, maybe we're wrong. Maybe no, we shouldn't have said that. Now every other doctor needs to come to the rescue because evidently Jerome Powell may have made some few mistakes from a communication standpoint. He is the face of the Federal Reserve as the chairman. Regardless of that fact, in the inner workings and the mechanics of the Federal Reserve from a voting standpoint, despite the fact that Jerome Powell is the chairman, he only carries one vote. Now, of course, in the greater scheme of things, the quote-unquote office politics at the Federal Reserve, the fact that he's the chairman, maybe his opinion and voice carries a little bit more weight, but at the end of the day, he only has one vote to decide, are we going to raise rates, do a pause, wait and see, or are we going to cut them? And what are we going to do with this $4 trillion balance sheet? Are we going to continue with it being on autopilot to unwind, which is what he said back in December? Or are we going to pause that as well? Or are we going to now enter another leg of quantitative easing, which would add to the balance sheet, not take away from it? This is unbelievable if you understand this stuff, ladies and gentlemen. This is a game. Something is going on here. We are not being told the truth. The no surprise to me, and if you believe these people, you do so at your own peril. The Federal Reserve is supposed to have a team of God knows how many PhD economists who I'm sure all claim to be highly intelligent. In addition to that, if the Federal Reserve calls somebody up who has a good reputation in the economy, whether that's another economist, whether that's a successful portfolio or hedge fund manager, if you get a call from the chairman of the Federal Reserve, you're probably going to take the call, and if he asks for your help, you're probably going to give him your opinion. So it's not as if the Federal Reserve is without intelligence to find what's going on in this economy. And even though they're not supposed to worry about the stock market, they can call anybody up and say, what's going on in the stock market? You got a really good track record. Come on, Bob, give us some information. What's going on? If we do this, what's going to happen? If we don't do this, what's going to happen? So there's no shortage of information on the part of the Federal Reserve. So with that said, what have they been broadcasting? What have they been telegraphing really for years? Of course, they've stepped it up a little bit, but they've been broadcasting that they are going to start increasing interest rates. Why? Because the economy is strong. We have lower unemployment. We have low inflation. It's not a threat. We're not worried about it. We have a healthy consumer. We have healthy corporations. We have a stock market making and hitting all-time highs. Clearly, the patient's good. Clearly, this guy is ready to run the 100-meter. Or a marathon. Whatever he wants to do, he can do it. Our medicine worked. Our therapy worked. Pat themselves on the back. Now it's time to take away the medicine. It's time to take away the crutch. The patient doesn't need it. What happens? A month and a half ago, the market drops. Goes down 10%. Then boom, another 10%. Now it's in bear market territory. Uh-oh. It's not in our charter. Stocks, bonds, currencies, all that stuff. It's not in our charter. But the addict threw a hissy fit. It needed another fix. Come on, man, just one more, please. Just one more hit. And the Federal Reserve gave it to him. And instead of saying, just one more, and then I'm going to go back and take it away and continue with raising rates and keeping the balance sheet on autopilot, the unwind, we're going to do wait and see. And with all of this miscommunication, this flip-flopping over a very short period of time from Chairman Powell, they had to send out the big guns to help this man. Jerome, sit down, man. You don't know what you're doing. But listen to us. Well, who's us? Former Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, who is the brainchild of this monstrosity, this terrible economic policy of zero interest rate, ZIRP, Z-I-R-P, zero interest rate policy, this quantitative easing. You don't learn about this stuff in school, ladies and gentlemen, because it never existed. This is voodoo economics. This is crazy. And wait till I get to a couple articles with what Jerome Powell just recently said again, and what Janet Yellen has said, which I've already talked about, but I'm going to go into more of what Jerome Powell said because it really has my blood boiling. But because of Jerome Powell's miscommunications, sit down, Jay. Oh man, you messed this up, sit down. So Uncle Ben Bernanke comes out along with Janet Yellen, and they have a conversation. This is public, by the way. This isn't behind closed doors. This is an interview. This is a discussion. And they're all sitting there, and they're patting themselves on the back for being the geniuses that they are, or think they are, I should say, and how everything's fine and dandy, and that quantitative easing and zero interest rate policy saved the day, and look how good everything is. But we have to be patient. Uncle Ben Bernanke said we got to be patient. Aunt Janet Yellen says we have to be patient. Hey, Jay, you picking up on this, man? You picking up what we're putting down? You got to be patient. Tell the market you're going to be patient. That you're going to put a put under this market, which just means it's an insurance policy. You had the Alan Greenspan put back in the 90s, early 2000s, when he was chairman. Anytime the markets went down, boom, here came Alan. Need some liquidity? We'll give it to you, no problem. Junkie needs a fix. Dealer works for the junkie. What do you think is going to happen? The question now becomes, in my mind, when does the dealer give that fatal hit and knocks out, if not kills, the addict, the junkie? Okay? You have something in economics called diminishing marginal returns. Okay? And it's exactly what it sounds like. Don't be intimidated by it if you're not familiar with the statement, with that terminology. Let me give you an example of what that means. You're thirsty, okay? I provide you with 6 bottles of water. You're really thirsty. I give you the first bottle. You down it real quick. You give me the empty bottle, I give you another one. You drink it. You drink that one fast, but not as fast as the first one. I give you the third one, same thing. Fourth one, same thing. By the time we get to the 5th, 6th one, you're like, oh, please don't give this to me anymore. My thirst is quenched. I don't need it. It's going to do more damage than good at this point. That's what's happening right now, in my opinion. How much more can these markets take? How much more can the junkie take before it knocks him out? And when it knocks him out, there's not going to be anywhere to go. Because this isn't just happening in the U.S., it's happening everywhere. You're really starting to see slowdowns in Europe. China, despite the fact that they claim they have 6% GDP, the amount of debt that is in that economy and the banking system on consumer balance sheets is very reminiscent of Japan 30 years ago. And if you recall what happened in Japan, it was not pretty. And they're still a zombie economy. So like I said, I was hoping to get into that a little bit more today, but I'm going to have to postpone that for another time simply because of the information that's come out from Jay Powell and Janet Yellen. So Jay Powell learned his lesson. You work for the banks. You work for the markets. Yes, our charter says full unemployment. Yes, it says maintain price stability. Yes, you've done that. Good boy, Jay. But that's just what we tell the people. What you're really supposed to do is keep this market up. You're supposed to make those people happy. Who are those people? Those are the bankers. That's the wealthy. Again, I don't demonize wealth at all. I'm a free market capitalist. Don't get me wrong. But I have a problem with fraud, and I have a problem with power concentrated in the hands of the few. And that's what I'm talking about here, and it gets my blood boiling. Because it's stealing from you. There is inflation. That is a hidden tax that you don't vote for, but we all pay it. And when you're on the lower income scale or the middle income scale, the effects are much more devastating than it is to somebody who's in the top 10%, top 5%, top 1%. Makes sense, right? So here's what really got me going, okay? Here's an article from CNBC in regards to Jay Powell's recent comments. Speaking at a town hall in Washington, D.C., to a group of educators, the central bank leader said his greatest economic fears lie outside the Fed's purview. Specifically, he called for more aggressive policies to address income inequality. Let me repeat this. Specifically, he called for more aggressive policies to address income inequality. Give me a break. Give me a break. Income inequality? This man's got a lot of audacity, or he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Let me explain to you the process of quantitative easing and how it makes its way through the economy, and then you tell me how this falls outside of the purview of the Federal Reserve. Federal government needs money because it can't be an adult. It can't contain itself. It just wants to spend, 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 spend. We don't bring enough money into the U.S. Treasury. Therefore, we have to borrow money. That's the deficit. The accumulation of those deficits over the years is what contributes to our national debt, which now stands at nearly $22 trillion. In previous podcasts, I said check out usdebtclock.org, and it'll make your head ring. You'll get dizzy, but check it out. Have a good time. The Fed can provide the government, Uncle Sam, with that money, not because it has it, but because it has the authority to print it or to create it out of thin air. Add digits to a computer screen, and boom, the Treasury can print some fancy pieces of paper. They call them U.S. Treasuries. They stamp an amount on them. The Federal Reserve can print some fancy notes called Federal Reserve notes. We call them U.S. dollars. They stamp them. And there's an exchange. Uncle Sam gets the dollars, the Federal Reserve notes, and the Federal Reserve gets the treasuries. So Uncle Sam owes the Federal Reserve the principal plus interest. Where's the interest come from? You guessed it, the Fed has to print even more money to pay the interest. It's a vicious cycle that doesn't end, and it's a nasty one. I'll have to do a segment on that, on the mechanics of everything. That's interesting. Most people don't know about it. And it's a shame because it affects them very personally. So now this money is printed. This is liquidity that can go into the marketplace. So now the question, since we're talking about income inequality, which exists, which is giving rise to populism in this country, had a big to do with President Trump's election, has a lot to do with people supporting Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Yellow Vest movement in France, has some things to do with Brexit, and a whole host of other areas. So income inequality is not unique to the U.S. It's global. And it's global for the same reasons. Quantitative easing or something very similar has been taking place the world over for a very long time. The unwinding of this will get nasty, believe me. So continuing with this process, this money has to go somewhere, right? Well, who's it go to? Where's it go? If there's income inequality and the rich are getting richer, who do you think gets the money first? I'll give you a second to think about it. Go ahead. That's right, the rich. The banks get it first. Then the banks can do what they want with it. They can invest, they can trade, they can buy financial assets with it. At today's price, which is going to be lower than tomorrow's price and future prices. So they got to do what we're all told to do as investors. Buy low, sell high, right? So they get this funny money first, and then it can make its way through to major corporations, to wealthy individuals with fantastic credit scores, and they get to do the same thing. They get to do some financial engineering, which I've spoken about previously. They get to do some share buybacks, increase the price of their share price, their personal income, the C-suite, the CEO, CFO, and all the like, have their compensation tied to the performance of their stock. Stock price goes up, their compensation goes up, they become wealthier, they can buy more financial assets. Rinse and repeat. Get what I'm saying? Then this money starts to trickle its way down to the middle class. And then after the middle class, it makes its way to the lower class. By this time, money has started changing hands. That's called the velocity of money. Now remember I told you I was going to tell you this all the time. Always and everywhere, inflation is a monetary phenomenon. So when the Federal Reserve increases the money supply, that's inflation. The effects of inflation are felt after the fact. Higher prices, how they make their way through the economy, different sectors, different industries, over time, different varying degrees. What gives rise to the speed and the effects of inflation is the velocity of money, how quickly a dollar makes its way and exchanges hands through an economy. So if the dollar comes to me and then I buy something with it, and then that person takes a dollar and spends it on something else, and round we go. The more times that happens, the higher the velocity. The more times that happens, the higher the rate of inflation should be. Okay, the effects of inflation. So by the time this money makes its way through to the hands of the middle class and the lower income classes, asset prices and the prices of almost everything else have already increased. So in regards to financial assets, stocks, bonds, commodities, which are owned mainly by the upper middle and the top 10%, especially in large enough amounts where it really makes a difference once these things start to go up in price, the wealthy make out like bandits. That's why income inequality the world over is at the degree that it currently exists. This is very logical. This is very, very predictable. Let me tell you something else that concerns Jay Powell. He is also concerned not only with income inequality, but productivity. Productivity is what drives an economy, not money printing, not debt, not fiscal stimulus, but savings and investment, which will create productivity. He thinks productivity is going to be a problem for the next decade. Did you hear that? For the next decade. Productivity. If you have increased productivity, economic theory would tell you that you should have higher wages as a result. He's already saying that we have income inequality. And I just gave you an example as to why that happened and why it will continue to happen. And now the man's saying that productivity is going to be sluggish over the next decade. So how is the income inequality going to get any better? If that's true, I think I have to agree with the man, because all of this debt needs to be paid back. And when you're paying back debt, you're not investing in new software. You're not investing in new hardware, plants and equipment, the types of things that would one would use to increase productivity, because it has to be go to paying off the debts that made you look good today and yesterday, but now it's not painting a really good picture for the future. At a time when we have terrible demographics in this country, we got a lot of people retiring. A lot of people are going to be on fixed incomes. A lot of people don't have savings. There's a recent report out that said 78% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. 78% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. How does that sound like a strong economy? Now, don't get me wrong. There's no question that if you really looked at that population of people and you dug deeper, there's probably a good handful of them, and I mean a really good handful, that probably live well beyond their means. So a lot of that is self-inflicted. But then there's a lot that it's not self-inflicted, and that's just the reality, because they have to deal with higher costs, which come from what? That's right, the inflation, the money printing, the debt monetization, the $4 trillion balance sheet, the $22 trillion in national debt, with no end in sight, by the way, and now a possible reverse of maybe we're going to cut rates now. I hope I'm doing a good enough job explaining this to everybody. I'm going to continue to do so because it's very important. That's what this show is all about. It's about education. It's about finding the truth. It's about preparing everybody the best that I can to set people up for success and survival for what I believe is coming, and I don't think it's going to be pretty. I hope I'm wrong. I really do, because it will not be pretty for a lot of good people. But I know economics, I understand finance, and one can only dance above and around and defy the laws of economic gravity for so long. And the further we push ourselves to new heights artificially, the further we have to fall. I really wish people would have a conversation about this and say enough is enough. We are ready to come together as a country. We will take the real medicine that we need. It's not going to be pretty. It will be painful. But it's what we need to do. I hope that makes sense. Leave comments. Send me an email. These podcasts are also on YouTube. Please subscribe. Follow that channel. I'm going to be posting other videos to YouTube in addition to these podcasts. That way you can have a visual of what I'm talking about, some of the data and charts that I look at that sort of drives my opinion and analysis of things. They'll be a little bit shorter than these podcasts, which I try to keep between 25 and 35 minutes. Probably more in the realm of, I don't know, I'd say maybe 15 to 25 minutes, but we'll see what happens with them as I start to get those posted. But please do share, like, spread the word, educate yourself. Don't just take my word for it. There's a lot of good information out there. So I will see you guys next time. Hope you enjoy this show. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.